And welcome back to Sourcing Matters. This is your host, Aaron Niederhellman. Last September, the UN released a report detailing that 90% of the $540 billion in global subsidies given to farmers every year are harmful. According to their findings, this agricultural support damages human health, it exacerbates the climate crisis, it dwindles nature, and it drives inequalities by excluding smallholder farmers. Now, just to be clear, the $500 billion amount actually underestimates the impact of subsidies. The report, published by the UN Food and Agricultural Organization, the FAO, and the UN Development Program, as well as the UN Environmental Program, only includes available data from 88 countries. So, it's actually even worse than expected. Just last week, NGOs Business for Nature and the B-Team issued the Financing Our Survival briefing. In it, they explain that the world is spending at least $1.8 trillion every year on subsidies, driving the annihilation of wildlife and causing a rise in global heating. According to the summary, the fossil fuel industry gets $620 billion, the agricultural sector gets $520 billion, water, $320 billion, and forestry, $155 billion. And according to that 2021 UN report, agriculture contributes a quarter of greenhouse gas emissions, 70% of biodiversity loss, and 80% of deforestation across the globe. This is something that we have a bit more of control over here. If we're empowered to vote with our dollars for good food, and we elect officials that are even mentioning this stuff as something that's other than commodities, then we can develop a collective consciousness around food as climate and social action, which can really drive change. So joining us today as a guest is someone who actually is doing something about agricultural subsidies. We welcome Todd Barker, CEO of Meridian Institute. Hey, Todd, how are you doing today?
Great, Aaron. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, thanks for taking the time. Do appreciate it. So, Todd, let's start right with the read and the layout, the preface of what we're talking about here. We're doling out a lot of money here to produce calories that hurt the planet and all of its inhabitants. Are these statistics true, and is it really this bad?
You've certainly gone right at a very hot topic and critically important questions. And we're dealing with these issues, as we'll get into over the course of the show, at multiple scales and firsthand. I think before we kind of get into the details, maybe just a few high-level observations that might set the stage for some of my comments in response to that question, which is, one, kind of stating the obvious, interest in food systems has never been greater. I mean, we've been working on food systems related issues at Meridian for over two decades, and I've been working on them for nearly three. And at the same time, as contentious as these issues are that you just mentioned, and as challenging and controversial as they are, we're also seeing at Meridian that while issues around polarization, partisanship, conflict, or capturing media headlines, that the hunger for collaborative solutions to these challenging problems has never been higher. And just in the last 18 months, our project portfolio at Meridian has gone from about 55 projects to over 130 in less than 18 months. And we have a team of about 80 total. And about a third of those are focused directly on food systems. And those that aren't directly squarely focused on food systems are related to food systems in some way, shape, or form, whether it's climate, land use, tropical deforestation. And, you know, really that's where Meridian comes in, because we bring the power of collaborative problem solving through multi-stakeholder processes to build understanding and drive action. And we look at these issues through a systems lens. We bring customized process, and we work on complex and controversial issues. I like to say the more complex and controversial, the better. That's our sweet spot. And these issues that you just teed up in your opening certainly fall into that category. You know, I think in short, these issues are critically important to address. And we're working at this, at, as I said, in kind of multiple scales. So maybe kind of the one initiative at Meridian that I would start with is the Just World Transition Initiative, which is around repurposing agricultural subsidies and reshaping policies to really create the food system that we need for the future. One that has supports farmers and farm profitability, mitigates and adapts to climate, has co-benefits, including water quality, supports biodiversity. And, you know, there are, as you mentioned, recent studies from the World Bank, FAO, and other institutions are talking about the kind of triple wins around this repurposing agenda in terms of raising farmer incomes, conserving farmland, reducing greenhouse gas mitigation, and the list goes on. And so, you know, we really do think this is a critical issue. The Just Rural Transition Initiative is housed at and managed by Meridian, but this is like all Meridian projects, multi-stakeholder. It's involving dozens of institutions, and it's really focused on continuing to build global momentum around this repurposing agenda, to use that shorthand, accelerating progress at the country level, and then also providing technical capacity, research and analysis to help drive action and change. So let me pause there. I could go on about JRT, the Just Rural Transition Initiative, but let me just pause and see if that triggers any questions for you.
Yeah, thanks. So it does. You know, we'll talk specifically about Just Rural Transition or just in general with what Meridian's doing with these multi-stakeholder initiatives. It sounds, hey, why not? Of course, right? You're coming out with incentives and values for all parties. It sounds like it's a no-brainer. Why is it so difficult to do these things, and what are the friction points?
You know, you really have to look at this, I would say, through a systems lens. One is, you know, a lot of these policies and subsidies have been in place for a very long time. Change is challenging and difficult under any circumstance, even when there's a shared vision for a future and there's competing interests, there's power dynamics at play, there are cultural issues. And so I really need to come at this through the lens of looking at this through a finance lens, a policy lens, a research and development lens. And, you know, in the context of, I mean, we could talk about the AGREE initiative, which is the AGREE Transforming Food and Ag Policy Initiative at Meridian, where we're working on these issues in the U.S. context. Let me just pause and see what direction you want to take this in terms of, you know, I can go deep in on the U.S. context and some of the work we're doing in AGREE, which I think will really kind of bring to life just the complexity of driving change on these really challenging issues that you're mentioning.
Yeah, and I do want to talk about AGREE because I think that's essential for our listeners to know a bit more about what happens behind the scenes and what's actually happening in the U.S. and the subsidy equation. But before we even get there, let's talk about developing this roundtable conversation, like who's actually getting there. So does Meridian determine who gets the invite to sit at the table? And how do you make that determination?
It's a combination. We certainly do a lot of work identifying, we do a lot of work in our projects on kind of landscape and analysis and who are the key players, who needs to be at the table. Increasingly, we're also talking about, we need to not only invite people into our projects like the Just Rural Transition Initiative, but we also need to be very conscious of significant work being done by others and thinking about how we can also join other people's tables. So, you know, it really is multi-pronged approach where there's work we do up front to identify key stakeholders and invite them in. And then, you know, really creating openings for others to join along the way. And so again, part of the Just Rural Transition Initiative is really working to build global momentum. And so it's kind of starting with a core and then continuing to build out over time. And you know, often the way we do this is inviting in one organization and asking them who else in their networks needs to be engaged and bringing those groups in and then asking the same questions of them. So over time, you know, JRT started relatively small, but again, we're now engaging dozens of institutions. We're farmers and farmers organizations, policymakers at all levels, companies, researchers, and academics. And again, it's just kind of been a bit of a snowball in terms of interest. It's really amazing to see this growing global momentum around the repurposing agenda.
Yeah, I think there's so much opportunity there, and people see it as maybe a location where there is less of that friction. 40% of food systems are gone to waste, so what a chance to reappropriate. But let's go back to the U.S. Farmer subsidies. Yeah. Let's talk about that. And so from my understanding, most U.S. subsidies are tied to the Farm Bill. I read that between crop price support and insurance, that U.S. agricultural subsidies are somewhere between $19 and $25 billion. So is Marco Sanchez correct from this FAO report that 90% of those resources are going to harmful practice? And if so, what is Meridian and your Agree initiative, what are you doing to address that problem?
Well, the Agree initiative, just to provide a little bit of context, was launched originally all the way back in 2010. It was focused squarely on U.S. food and agriculture policy and had a very broad mandate at its outset. So we were looking at research and development, U.S. policy and investment in research and development, local and regional food systems, labor, and at the time, the issue of immigration reform was very hot, working lands, nutrition assistance. So it had a very broad focus. But for the last about 5, 6, 7 years, the Agree Initiative has had a very strong focus through its Economic and Environmental Risk Coalition. We actually have two sister coalitions, the E2 Coalition for short, Economic and Environmental Risk, and then the Climate, Food, and Ag Dialogue, or CFAD. But the E2 Coalition is really what I want to focus on because of your questions up front around agricultural subsidies. So we've had a very laser-like focus on driving broader adoption of agricultural conservation practices through the reform of the Federal Crop Insurance Program. And those numbers you just shared about U.S. subsidies are right on point. And the crop insurance title, Title 11, is approximately $8 billion a year. 90%+ of farmers in the U.S. have U.S. or federally supported crop insurance, and it covers over 350 million acres of working land. So we chose to focus on the crop insurance title in the Farm Bill in particular because of its size. There's Title II in the Farm Bill, which is the conservation title, critically important, supports farmers in adopting conservation practices, includes programs like EQIP, and it's roughly $2 billion a year. And then you've got Title I of the Farm Bill, the commodity title, which also is roughly $8 billion a year. And so we really wanted to focus on the crop insurance title, really difficult to change for good reasons. It needs to be actually sound. Any changes need to be backed up with data and analysis. But our hypothesis was that the risk reduction benefits of agricultural conservation practices, which, you know, increasingly some people are referring to as regenerative practices, that's a whole other debate and controversy about what do we mean by regenerative ag, but let's just focus on the conservation practice piece. Our hypothesis was that these practices reduce risk and were not necessarily being adequately recognized in the Federal Crop Insurance Program. And that farmers that were using practices, which is, you know, the repurposing agenda back to the JRT example, are really, how do you shift dollars and policies away from incentivizing or supporting specific crops to incentivizing supporting outcomes that we want to see, like improved soil health, enhanced biodiversity, carbon mitigate or climate mitigation and adaptation. We, through the Agree Initiative, are really kind of coming at this through kind of five parallel work streams. And the foundation of all the work that I'm going to describe is all based on data and analysis. Like everything that we're doing in terms of policy and political reform is based on leveraging large data sets to look at the correlation between the adoption of these practices that have these benefits that I just mentioned, and yield variability, which is the measure of risk used by the Federal Crop Insurance Program, which basically says the less variability you have in extreme weather, whether it's excess water or drought, the more resilient your systems are and the less risky you are overall. And so we're using data analysis as the foundation for all of our work. We've developed a new first ever, which we're really proud of, the work done by the Agree Coalition through this multi-stakeholder process, the first ever federally subsidized crop insurance product called post-application coverage endorsement, which is for a practice, a conservation practice, which supports farmers in reducing their nitrogen use. And we could go into it, but essentially making sure that nitrogen is used at the time of year where it's going to be most helpful in terms of growth, and where there's significantly less chance that there'll be excess nitrogen applied, which could run off and create water quality problems. So we're actually, I could go deep on that process, but we used a process called the 522 and 508 process. It took us over almost 2 years to develop the submission to USDA, which was approved. The product is for sale this crop insurance season, which closes March 15th. And just to give you a sense of the scale here, because I think that, you know, part of the reason we've focused on crop insurance is because of the amount of subsidy, the $8 billion, and the number of farmers and the number of acres. We, in advance of the March 15th closing date, we're working with the Illinois Corn Growers Association, which is one of our partners in developing this product, which we call PACE for short, the post-application coverage endorsement. And they just recently sent out over 50,000 postcards to eligible farmers in Illinois, making sure that they were aware of the PACE product, and that if they were interested in learning more, we actually created a website that they're directed to that has a little video that describes the PACE product, how it works, what the coverage is, and then encouraging them to get in touch with their crop insurance agents. We're working right now on identifying, again, through data analysis, just what the kind of environmental and climate benefits of this product could be, even if adoption is relatively minor. But, you know, we anticipate rather significant indicator of GHG emissions reductions, and also significant water quality benefits. And that's 55,000 farmers who are eligible in just one state. PACE product is currently available in 11 states in selected counties. And we hope next year, given that this is a pilot this year, that there'll be even more farmers that are able to buy the PACE product. We're also in the process of bringing forward another proposal to the Federal Crop Insurance Board for another crop insurance product that would also be available to farmers using federally subsidized or who are using conservation practices. And we're quite excited about that. So we have this whole, you know, work stream around developing specific products that are of interest to farmers who are really trying to drive change through changing their practices. So let me pause there, because that's one of five work streams, and I don't want to kind of go down too deep in a rabbit hole without giving you a chance to jump in.
It's absolutely fascinating, because I mean, I can tell right away you have to get into the weeds, but I would guess part of your role, or a major part of your role, is to then be able to translate this to all those different stakeholders that have a thumb in the pie here, right? I mean, explain that the outcome measures that you're defining here of soil health and sequestering carbon and water retention are the essential next steps. But with this, you know, you're over a decade into it, and you're basically at the end of the beginning, I would say it that way. Maybe you're just kicking it off, really, of like, whew, wipe the sweat off the brow, and now you're now you can iterate, right? And you test this with a couple pilot programs. So once you start receiving this information, March 15th closes, and you start to see this next step, and there is a sea change happening without a doubt. We know we have to move this direction. Agriculture has been empowered to take those next steps. But nonetheless, that still puts a lot of weight on your shoulders. How do you continue to take that information in and iterate?
Yeah, no, great question. And I, before I answer that question, I just want to respond to one thing you just said, which is, you know, in a lot of ways, I mean, this work is really hard. It's complex. It's controversial in some regards. It involves multiple stakeholders. And, you know, as you said, we've been at this for a decade. And I feel like in some ways, we really are, you know, we've built a really solid foundation over the last 5 years around this crop insurance work. And it really feels like the work is starting to snowball in terms of interest and in terms of impact. But this is hard work, and you got to stick with it. And you have to, again, look at this through multiple lenses to really ensure sustainability. So, but back on this, how do we iterate? Great question. Right now, we are all in on getting the word out about PACE before March 15th. But as soon as March 15th is here and gone, we are going to then start reaching out to farmers that actually purchased the PACE product and creating and inviting in farmers who are interested in being part of a working group to give us feedback on how the product works, what could be improved, because there are chances to improve these products over time. So what could be improved? And then also using that group to help get the word out to farmers beyond the 11 states and beyond the eligible counties. And we hope encouraging USDA to look at expanding the availability of this product next year. So, and then we'll be continuing to work with that group of farmers. We're also had a meeting just last week and week before with a number of the big food and ag companies with significant sustainability programs to talk to them about the PACE product. And to encourage them to get the word out to farmers in their network. So we're also going to be working with companies who have ambitious sustainability commitments to invite them into a discussion around how can PACE not only be improved, but are there other similar types of products that they would like to see brought into the marketplace where Meridian and the Agri Initiative could play a role. We're also, you know, maybe just to say a couple other things that are kind of related, which is, you know, we're developing new products, but we're also kind of coming at this through several other dimensions here as well to the work. One is we're working on removing policy barriers. So in advance of the 2018 Farm Bill, a lot of discussion around whether they're farmers using cover crops, whether it affected their eligibility for crop insurance. And so, again, we worked through the multi-stakeholder collaborative process with our coalition members and others to get language in the Farm Bill to clarify that the use of these practices, especially cover crops, wasn't going to affect eligibility for crop insurance. So we have a whole work stream around removing policy barriers, whether they're real or perceived, to the adoption of conservation practices. And then, now back to this data foundation, we have the data, which is the foundation for all of our work. We have a really interesting project going on right now. It's a MOU between USDA, Meridian Institute, which is the home for the Agri Initiative, and University of Illinois, where we are, University of Illinois is using data sets on yield variability that had never before been available to researchers outside of USDA, to look at the 2019 year. In 2019, there were $4 billion in prevent plant claims, essentially farmers who were unable to get crops in the ground or out of the ground. And because of that, they were able to file through the crop insurance program for prevent plant claims. $4 billion in prevent plant claims. And so this research that University of Illinois is doing is looking at the correlation between farmers that were using agricultural conservation practices and regenerative practices and the correlation to prevent plant claims. And again, the hypothesis is that farmers that were using these practices were significantly less likely to file prevent plant claims. And, you know, these are big numbers, right? And so we'll see what the data show, But again, just back to your earlier comments about the size of the subsidies in the system, back to my title two of the Farm Bill, the title that's specifically focused on promoting regenerative practices and agricultural conservation practices, $2 billion. Huh. The prevent plant claims were double that in 1 year. And so again, we think that, you know, again, these practices have significant benefits for farmers, environmental benefits, conservation benefits, and it could save taxpayers a significant amount of money as well. So we're really excited about that data pilot. We're looking at doing other data pilots. We're early stages of looking one at regenerative grazing practices, for example, in the Rocky Mountain region. And we're talking with farmers directly about other data pilots that could help them make more informed decisions at the farm level, could help policymakers at USDA, could help the actuaries at the Risk Management Agency and others. So we're really excited about that data pilot as well. Data is not always necessarily the sexiest topic, but we keep finding over and over and over that everything we do is really predicated on, you know, leveraging these big data sets and doing really rigorous analysis to have strong policy, to have strong positions around the policy reform that's needed.
Yeah, I would guess the data sets and the data analysis give you at least a foundation to have those discussions and alleviate some of those policy barriers. And it was actually one of the questions I was thinking as you were speaking to that is, boy, I can understand more so the adoption from on the ground war, the farmers, the producers, the companies that are servicing the needs of consumers that are engaged in regenerative best practice or more environmentally conscious food systems. But sometimes the policymakers, that air war side of things, may be a little more challenging. Ultimately, they're the ones that control the purse strings here. So maybe I'll let you put on your best diplomatic hat and explain to us here how you build all that information up, how you put the data sets with the anecdotal stories and go to find some commonality on the left and the right to explain this is everyone's best interest and this is the way of the future. How have you seen success with either Agree Initiative or other things at Meridian to change the minds of a few at the top that ultimately make those decisions?
While these issues we are talking about are certainly complex and sometimes are often controversial, they're not necessarily and don't need to be partisan. And to go back to the kind of preparation for the 2018 Farm Bill, we worked with Senators Thune from South Dakota and Senator Klobuchar from Minnesota to introduce the Ag Data Act of 2018, which found its way into the Farm Bill. And essentially, you know, so bipartisan marker bill that found its way into the Farm Bill. That language in the Farm Bill led to a strategy by USDA to make this yield variability data, which is the basis for the prevent plant pilot that I just spoke about with the University of Illinois. And, you know, what I think people see this as it really is a bipartisan issue in that coming at it through the data and analysis lens, farmers want to know, like, are the practices that I've been using for the last 2 years, the last decade, are they really driving improvements? Are they support like environmental and conservation outcomes that we all want to see? Are they supporting farm profitability? And as locked in as people sometimes appear to be in terms of the practices they're using and the systems that they're operating in, what we found in, again, is you come at this from this data and analysis perspective, and you can show unequivocally that using these practices instead of these practices have these outcomes that we're looking for and support farm profitability, which is critical for adoption, you can see change happen quickly. And so really that was the kind of the way that we came at this issue before 2018 and the Farm Bill, which, you know, we had a lot of success in the Farm Bill because of the way this was framed. And I think when you look at this, it can enhance soil fertility. It can provide water quality benefits. It can save taxpayers money. It is helping policymakers make better informed decisions. It's helping farmers at the farm level make better farm level decisions. So again, this doesn't need to be polarized. I mean, it gets back to my comments at the beginning of our conversation about like, what is it that Meridian does? You know, again, we're all hearing about polarization and partisanship, but hunger for these kind of collaborative approaches through multi-stakeholder processes that really are bringing, you know, the systems lens, I think can show that there are ways to redirect agricultural subsidies, reshape policies in a way that has these, you know, multiple benefits that we've been talking about that are being recognized in reports from country level to the World Bank to the FAO report you mentioned. You know, we're just seeing it over and over. And what I'm particularly excited about through the Agree Initiative is we are showing how to drive real change on the ground through enhanced understanding through all the work we've done around this data and analysis.
Well, I love it. I mean, I hope food systems can be that conduit of change and not make climate discussions polarizing or a partisan conversation. Unfortunately, sometimes it doesn't work right, especially having a two-party system. But nonetheless, that's the game we have to play, right? So it is the ball game. So seems like you guys are balancing that act nicely. And speaking of which, it's not just food and ag here, right? So Meridian Institute facilitates change in all types of multi-stakeholder worlds. From what I read, it is environmental and natural resources, it's climate change, it's agriculture and food systems, as we mentioned, it's forest, it's healthcare and human health, it's oceans, coast, resilience, science, technology, and water. Really, no messing around when it comes to systems change for you guys. So could you give us another example, maybe outside of food and ag, of how Meridian Institute is doing this multi-prong, multi-stakeholder approach and how you've made that work?
Sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to. And it, I was chuckling as you were reading through the list because I've had many examples over my career at Meridian, which is now more than two decades, and one just recently where some people that have worked with us quite extensively think that all we do is food and agriculture, or all that we do is tropical deforestation, or all we do is fisheries. And they are sometimes quite surprised to learn about the breadth of our work, which, you know, I think I think is a real benefit, you know, in terms of the intersectionality of all these issues. Like our work on tropical deforestation and climate really helps inform our food systems work. You know, they're inseparable in a lot of ways. And also, I want to talk about some of our work in the fisheries and ocean space as a different example. But the other phenomenon we've been witnessing recently is, you know, when people, a lot of people, and we were involved around the periphery with the Food Systems Summit, and a lot of people, when they hear the term food systems, you know, they think about terrestrial food systems. Mm-hmm. And as one of our project participants and a funder is constantly reminding us, you know, fish are food too. They're part of the food system. So we're, you know, we're doing a lot of work. We're really trying to, you know, use this very broad encompassing perspective on what do we mean by food systems. But let me talk about a completely different area and go back to 2019 and some work we've been doing on oceans plastics. And we've been doing this work in partnership with the Oceans Plastics Leadership Network, a real energetic leader, Dave Ford, that we've been partnering with since 2019. And one of the, I've had a few moments throughout my career that are particularly memorable. And in 2019, a colleague and I from Meridian spent 3 days on a ship with 150 individuals, ranging from Greenpeace activists to Dow Chemical executives. And we sailed into the Bermuda Triangle for 3 days into one of the largest concentrations of oceans plastics in the world, the North Atlantic Gyre. And we spent 3 days in deep discussions around the oceans plastics crisis. And we would come to a screeching halt and hear horns blaring when the captain saw large concentrations of plastics, and we would launch overboard in Zodiacs, and we were snorkeling through these masses of ocean plastics. And it was really an incredible experience. And it was amazing because, you know, we were this floating meeting and we were experiencing this issue up close. And it was incredibly powerful, memorable. And was great about that as well as we had people there from the corporate sector, from civil society, policymakers, from World Bank to national level, subnational level, cities, researchers who are looking at the impacts of oceans plastics on marine life. We had entrepreneurs who are investing in new technology. And, you know, it was just an incredible experience. And since then, we've been working with OPLN on a couple different tracks, again, all through a collaborative approach, multi-stakeholder approach, systems lens. So there are really kind of two tracks we've been on that have really dominated our work in the oceans plastic space in the last 3 years. So one is the work that's happening around extended producer responsibility legislation in the US in particular, which is essentially where companies are paying for the collection, sorting, and recycling of packaging that they're putting into the marketplace. And we have engaged hundreds of stakeholders in the last few years about what the contours of EPR legislation might look like. And, you know, a lot of it is about building trust, building understanding, again, using data and analysis to kind of understand the impacts of different options from a policy perspective. So that work is ongoing and, you know, another kind of example of some of the work we're doing. And then we're also doing work, so that's in the US context. And then globally, there's growing interest in a global treaty for plastics pollution, something I'll think about the Paris Agreement, but for plastics. And we have now brought together over 500 stakeholders in six different countries for country level dialogues focused on educating stakeholders on what a treaty might do, what it might focus on. And we're starting to work with those players at the national level to get a jump start on developing national action plans in advance of what, you know, a growing number of stakeholders would like to see in terms of this global treaty. And we've been working in Chile and Ghana and Indonesia and the US, Malaysia, Pakistan. And so, again, just another, you know, really exciting area of work for Meridian that's, you know, pretty fundamentally different than the work we were just talking about on subsidies and agriculture. But yeah, just another really interesting area of work for us.
Fascinating. I mean, first of all, I'm glad you all made it back from the Bermuda Triangle. That's a good first step. So, but nonetheless, the fact that, you know, you're actually seeing some actions, and I think there has been a large collective consciousness and from, you know, everyone, global audiences around ocean plastics. It's almost typified our impact on the planet and what's actually happening. So the fact that you're getting those types of stakeholders and those types of individuals who were once some of the polluters in the space that are now trying to be part of the solution is only positive steps forward. So,
yeah.
Hey, you know, for my last question here, Todd, just quickly, maybe you can summarize this because, you know, like I, you're the father of a couple of Gen Z kids at home and, you know, are you, you optimistic for the future for them?
I have a daughter, Sadie Pearl, and Wyatt. Sadie's a freshman in college and Wyatt's a junior, and also our staff at Meridian who are younger generation. And I just, the commitment that they have to addressing these issues and I think is really inspirational. And I am optimistic. I am by nature a glass half full person. You know, I've been doing this work for 30 years because I believe in the power of collaboration. I believe that we do have an opportunity to really drive change. I've seen it happen through our work at Meridian that we've supported and other and in other ways as well. And I think this next generation is really pushing in a way that's healthy and appropriate given the significance of the issues that we're facing here in the United States and globally.
Fantastic. Well, Todd, I learned a great deal. I know our listening audience will as well. So I thank you for taking the time to share such insight.
Aaron, thanks for having me. It was great to connect as always, and look forward to hearing future podcasts with others as well. You've got a really great series, and really enjoyed listening to some of the recent podcasts.